Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Sunday, everyone. I'm Jason Ophir, as always, here with another episode of Paranormal Horizons with the beautiful and talented co-host, Sherry Pang. Sherry, hello.
Hello, Jason. How are you?
Not too bad. Just living the dream as usual. How was your week?
Very good. Very eventful. And just trying to recover, really recovering from gallery readings and just recovering. So just taking a couple days break and back to work on Monday. So, yeah. How about you? You've been working too?
Busy, busy. I'm a busy bee, always working and not doing much else. It seems that that's pretty much all life is work, unfortunately. But it pays the bills and it keeps me well fed with pizza and tacos, so I guess I can't complain too much.
Oh, pizza and tacos sounds pretty good. Wow. Hey, I want to share this really quick. Has anyone ever went to the Maritime Museum up in Astoria, Oregon?
I think so, but it's been a very long time.
Well, we went there a couple weeks ago, and it's quite interesting. I put it on our post. I got permission to screenshot a couple of the pictures of sea monsters, and the sea monsters are considered mythical or legendary. They're sea-dwelling creatures, often believed to be in the sea. They're immense in size. And their descriptions are just amazing. These beasts, you have to go there. But what they look like, some of them, is like they look like they're part like devil. They're like a human being, but it has the antlers, look like part of the devil with the horns, and then it's got a tail like a whale. It's quite interesting. You have to go there and check it out, or I don't know how you would, but go ahead and check our Facebook page and check out these sea monsters. So they believe that these sea monsters actually were in the waters. And pretty good drawings, I have to say, but pretty interesting.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me if there's things still lurking in the oceans that we haven't discovered yet. I know that, there's some prehistoric, like, megalodon sharks, and there's still giant squids out there. But I could imagine being on a ship at night and maybe misinterpreting a whale off in the distance as some humanoid demonic sea monster. But who knows? Maybe things like that do exist, and we haven't discovered them yet.
I'm sure. Positively, I'm sure we haven't. But anyway, we have a new guest tonight, and I do not know how to pronounce his last name. It's S-Z-U-R-E-E-K, and I'm going to call him Dylan because I don't want to mispronounce his last name. He can probably correct me on that or tell people what his last name, how it's pronounced. But he's going to talk about raising our consciousness and the different type of modalities, how we can learn from the different things that he's been learning and taught. And so we're going to bring him on the show.
Cool. Well, I know if there's anything needed out there in the world, it's raising one's consciousness. So this will be good.
Absolutely.
I'll bring him on right now. Hey, Dylan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jason. It's great to meet you. Thank you for having me on.
Hi,
Dylan. It's a great pleasure.
Hi, Sherry. So my last name is actually pronounced.
I'm glad to have you on the show. First timer, and we're welcome. And, we're open to see what we can do to learn and help our listeners improve their life on a spiritual, mental, and emotional level. So quickly, you want to describe what you do?
Yeah, I really appreciate having me on. And I just wanted to say that my name is Dylan Schudick. And so basically what it is that I do is I'm a certified practitioner of the completion process, which is an emotional trauma resolution modality that was created by Teal Swan. And I work primarily in the realm of emotional integration in terms of how we can use integrating past traumas, belief systems, and patternings that were sustained at during certain points of trauma that inhibit us from living a fulfilled life. So I also work with a lot of energy. I do polarity therapy and other energy work along the lines of that. basically anything to facilitate the human awakening is my jam. So that's really what I like to talk about and go into.
Well, if anybody needs any awakening, it sure is me. And like I said, I think the consciousness of humanity, it could just be, maybe I have a skewed opinion, but at least the way the world's going is we need to raise that consciousness. There seems to be a lot of negativity and competition and ego out there. So if somebody, say, such as myself, that wants to raise my consciousness, where do I start with that? If I come to you, what are some things that I could do, you know, at home or whatever to start that process?
So the very first thing that I would actually say in terms of raising an individual's consciousness, we have to change our relationship with our pain. So humanity likes to demonize negative emotional states. Now, the thing is a negative emotional states are actually very important for us to embrace, especially if we're going to start healing our traumas, which are a hindrance to us fully embodying our fullest potential. So one of the greatest things that I could say is if we could start to develop a practice as individuals of taking time out of each day, especially in the mornings, to sit with our emotions just the way that we are. I like to call this a somatic meditation. So it's basically meditating or holding presence and observing the sensations that are unfolding within the body. And one of the greatest ways or times that we can also do this is when we're in a triggered state of being. So when something really pisses us off, or if we get really upset or triggered by a movie, or maybe we're experiencing heartbreak, one of the greatest things that we can actually do is stop what we're doing, even if it's just for 5 minutes, and take our full undivided attention inward and allow ourselves to feel the sensations that are unfolding in response to whatever stimulus is happening within our reality. From there, we can actually start to see that we'll have thoughts that are attached to those emotional states of being. And oftentimes, those thoughts are of like frequency to whatever that emotion is. So let's say you have complete despair. We might have thoughts that rise up like, I'll never have a life that's worth living. And when we're able to start to see those thoughts, we have a direct line into our subconscious state of being. So in simply tapping into our emotions, we actually get a huge access point into a lot of things that are lingering underneath the surface that we don't really pay attention to in our daily lives.
Well,
that's one.
I think a lot of people experience trauma and heartbreak, and so I like the way that you put that, that it's more of an access point, like you said, that like a starting point to be able to address some of those things. I don't think there's probably anybody on the planet that hasn't experienced some sort of trauma, be it emotional or physical or anything like that. But I know for me, I tend to ruminate, to think too much about things, and always tend to try, you know, kind of gravitate more towards negative thoughts. Is that pretty common with people, you know, assuming the worst kind of thing?
Yeah, so I actually want to, like, take a moment and just talk about, like, trauma for a second. So basically, people, when they think of trauma, they basically think of, like, extreme scenarios of trauma. Rape, physical abuse, war scenes. But ultimately, trauma is a painful experience that goes without resolve. It's as simple as that. So even being weaned from the breast or a breakup, all of those things are actual trauma. So I really like the way that you defined trauma, and basically everybody experiences trauma. So there's not a single person on this earth who doesn't actually have trauma. And then to go into ruminating and negative thoughts. So ruminating and negative thoughts is a very interesting experience. One of the things that I would actually suggest is for any individual is, first and foremost, where are these thoughts coming from in terms of my
brain? No.
What?
I'm just smart.
What?
I said from my brain, I'm being smart.
Oh, I just couldn't hear you. Hilarious. So basically, our thought patterns basically function like a fractal. So our past experiences create our perspective of the world. And oftentimes, if we're ruminating in downward negative cycles, it's because we've had a few triggers in our external environment that are triggering thought patterns from the past, which are an automatic process. So one of the best things that we can do if we're ruminating in our thought patterns is actually what I described earlier. So we have a process where our thoughts are going to trigger the hypothalamus in the brain, which is then going to release chemicals or hormones that create emotions within the body. And this becomes a closed-loop system where the emotions trigger more thoughts, which trigger more emotions, which trigger more thoughts, which gets us in a really agonizing pattern or cycle. And one of the best things that we can do to put a stop in that cycle is actually stop the thoughts. And the best thing that we can do, I would personally would say in that, is focus inward on the emotions, the sensations that are happening in response to those thoughts in our body. So let's say we have a sinking in our stomach or a clenching in our chest, or if it's something that really aggravates us, our face might be tensing up and heating up. If we can take all of our awareness there and basically just affirm to ourselves like a mantra, it's completely okay for me to feel this way. Given the situation that I'm in, if anybody else were in this situation, they would feel this exact same way. If we can just revalidate ourselves and allow our inner being to know that we are present with it, eventually the emotions will start to flow through the body and the thoughts will start to taper down and we'll start to basically integrate that state of discord into our being and it'll move through. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I've always thought that, you know, if somebody has negative thoughts, that it always kind of manifests in the physical world. So if you have negative thoughts about relationships, then that's what you're going to get. Do you think that that's true, that these negative thoughts kind of create this cycle of negativity or causing the same situations to repeat?
I am so glad that you brought that up. Okay, so basically, yes, I do believe that's true. And what you're going to find is our third dimensional reality is basically like that of a mirror. So, but if you're talking about the law of attraction, basically like we create our own realities, so what we think about, we attract. And that is absolutely true. Now, one of the issues that you'll find is the majority of our thoughts are subconscious. So we aren't even aware of what we're thinking, I'd say 85% to 90% of the time. Really, the conscious mind is just the tip of the iceberg. So you could even have a person who's positively focusing all the time, and they continuously attract painful experiences within their life because they have a traumatic background. And or a painful background, or those kinds of thought patterns that are running basically on a loop. So one of the best things that we can do is start to consciously change our thinking, but also find ways to regress back to original points of trauma that happened when the subconscious mind was developed in childhood. And basically, oh, sorry, what were you about to say?
Oh, no, go ahead.
Oh, basically, where humans are at right now is, yes, we do create our own reality. And if we do actually want to start to live lives that are fulfilling, we have to embrace all states of being. Now, what I will say is that since the majority of our subconscious mind is actually developed within childhood, you're going to find that we have root traumas. And pretty much everything experienced after that is a reflection of a root trauma. So let's say that our subconscious mind is our hard drive, right? We have the equation, which is going to create the pattern that fractal, our life experience, is unfolding in. That equation is set in childhood, and the pattern unfolds throughout our entire life. So ultimately, if we're able to utilize a current day emotional trigger, or even a negative thought pattern in our emotional response to that, we can actually utilize that as a thread or a gateway to access our subconscious mind and the aspects of self that are basically still very much so alive and existing within our subconscious state of being.
So it's going back, way back, if we can remember, way back in our childhood, and that could be all the way up through, you know, from infancy, correct?
Yes. Yeah, it can even, what's so interesting, if you really want to get esoteric with it, it could even take you into the ancestral line. So it can even take you before you were conceived in terms of trauma. Through our genes are multidimensional, so they actually carry a lot more information in terms of experience than we're even aware of. And basically, if we are able to regress back to a childhood experience and then create resolve on a mental and emotional level, this is how inner child work modalities actually work, is you're basically regressing back to a point of trauma, creating resolve on a mental and emotional level, which is changing the equation. So then your external pattern starts to shift. Does that make sense?
I mean, I find it fascinating. I think that, you know, this is an area that everybody should really focus on and try. I know for me personally, learning to heal those past traumas would be great. And I find it interesting that it goes back that far to infancy. It makes me wonder what sort of traumas I've gone through that I can't remember. I'm sure there's stuff there that I'm not even consciously aware of.
You would be surprised. Actually, the majority of what we'll regress back into is stuff that we don't remember, or like we do have some memory of it, but it's so far back that it's almost out of the filing cabinet. Like it's insane. And a lot of it is really simple stuff. I can't even tell you how many times I've personally regressed back to birth, being weaned from the breast, being dropped off at preschool. And these are, I mean, of course, we have traumas that are more extreme within our lives, but those small things actually get reflected in terms of, like, extreme abandonment later on in our life. So let's say, like me, I have abandonment trauma, so to say, and I could, you know, be attracted to partners. I might actually create and subconsciously find myself attracted to people who are the type of disposition that's going to create and recreate the abandonment trauma. Oh, I want to talk about identity for a second. So basically, our identity is based upon what it is that we've experienced. So our identity is everything that we've identified with, and this is good or bad. And this is one of the greatest things that we don't realize as individuals, is that we've identified with a lot of things that are extremely painful and unfulfilling within our lives. So we can even identify with certain events or traumas that happen to us. And in order to solidify our sense of self and our identity, we subconsciously find ourselves attracted to people and scenarios that are going to recreate that same emotional discord.
So what is abandonment trauma? Can you explain that? What kind of examples are abandonment traumas?
Yeah, I love to going into child development. So abandonment trauma is basically where you have either a perceived or real abandonment within a child's life. Now, a lot of this can even happen in terms of like a baby being in the crib and crying out at night. And even if the mother just takes too long to get to that child can be in such a distressed state because ultimately their survival is dependent on that mother. And if that mother doesn't show up in a timely manner, it is a perceived abandonment, which is then in that case a threat to their life. And then the other thing that you would have is legitimate abandonment, where a child either, let's say, dropped off at preschool for their first time, and they don't understand where they're going, where their mom is going, who's been their primary attachment their whole life. Their mom has been their whole world, or their father, or whoever. And to have that person leave is another perceived abandonment and a legitimate abandonment at the same time, because they are not they don't have the ability to rationalize what's happening to them at that point. And then the other types of abandonment that you have are like scenarios where let's say someone is dropped off in an orphanage, where then ultimately they are completely abandoned within their life. So abandonment trauma is basically where there's a perceived or actualized abandonment. And then one of the other things that you have that kind of goes hand in hand with abandonment trauma, but creates a different attachment style. So one of the things to talk about in terms of our traumas is the way in which we relate to people after the fact, after we've experienced trauma. So all of us have different ways in which we connect with one another. And within our relationships, we have ways in which we attach to people. And there can be healthy attachments, and there can be attachments that negatively impact us and cause discord within our relationships. So you'll have an anxious attachment style, which actually comes from abandonment trauma. And then you'll have this other thing called an avoidant attachment style, where that actually comes from something called enmeshment trauma. And enmeshment trauma is where you say you have a baby, and that baby is at a point in their development where they're just starting to crawl. Now, previously to that, a baby would basically identify them and the mother as one entity. They wouldn't see themselves as different than the mom. But let's say, okay, we have this baby. This baby's starting to realize that they are their own individual being. So that's a really crucial point for that baby to be able to go and explore themselves and then come back to mom and have that sense of safety. Now, you can have an abandonment trauma where, let's say, that baby goes to explore themselves and they come back and mom isn't there. Or let's say mom has an unfulfilling relationship with dad, and so she has a lot of emotional needs that aren't being met. What you can have happen is basically mom starts to project her emotional needs on the baby, which isn't actually capable of meeting those needs in the first place, and is at a very crucial stage in their development where their entire identity and sense of autonomy is starting to be, the foundation for that is starting to be laid. And if mom becomes too clingy and attached to the child at that point and putting her emotional needs on the child, that child develops no sense of self. And so ultimately, later on in adult life, you'll find that that child starts to perceive connection as a threat to their self-concept. So they fear that if they actually have the type of intimacy that they do desire, it's a contradicting fear because they do desire this intimacy and they know that if without human intimacy, they'll basically fizzle out and die. But then if they do get that intimacy, their entire identity could be consumed. It's an interesting subconscious dynamic that you have playing out.
How do you work with abandonment trauma? It's interesting because Jason and I are both adopted. And
yeah, that's
so,
what I was just
going to say. How do you work through it and what can you do to heal those parts that have been there since way, probably even could be even pregnancy or even, like you said, a past life?
So what you're going to find in terms of healing abandonment trauma is it's extremely difficult. Now, this is, I have abandonment trauma myself, so I can completely relate. And what you're going to find is that people with abandonment trauma are typically bringing in partners that are avoidant. So these partners aren't showing up in the ways in which we need in terms of deep connection and intimacy. These partners may not be willing to meet our needs, even if they're simple needs, like simple reassurance, like, don't worry, baby, I'm not going anywhere, I'm here. That's really simple, and oftentimes we'll attract partners that are the complete opposite. And basically what happens is that we're getting set up with the reflection of our original parent dynamic within our current day relationship. So it's actually triggering all of our abandonment. Now, one of the best things that we can do when our abandonment trauma is triggered, where we feel that intense sense of anxiousness, like, oh my God, I'm going to be left at any moment, we can sink into that emotional state of being and utilize either somatic processing, simply feeling that anxiousness and letting ourselves know that it's okay to feel that way, or there's a wide variety of different modalities that we can utilize to access and use that emotion as a thread to take us back to an original point of trauma. So that I would typically start to recommend any modality that incorporates inner child work, and there's a few that I would suggest. One of the greatest things, too, in terms of why I recommend regressing back to trauma in terms of what happened in our childhood is it starts to change that equation that I was talking about earlier. So we're actually more of a match to partners who would be willing to meet our needs. So when we go back to thinking about the law of attraction, like we create our reality, it kind of sucks because in reality, if we have an abandonment trauma, we're going to continuously recreate that experience with our partners. And so to some degree, it's a balance between going back and regressing to what happened as a child and finding partners that can actually show up in terms of meeting our needs and understanding our needs and seeing our emotions and our state of being as absolutely valid. And this person also has to be capable of prioritizing. So someone with abandonment trauma is going to need constant reassurance from their partners. Like, I'm here, I'm not going anywhere. If they get anxious, they need to be able to actually reach out to that partner and say, hey, listen, I'm in a really anxious state right now, and it's triggering a lot of things from my past, or it's really creating a lot of discord within my life right now. Are you still here? they need a partner that's actually going to be receptive to that and give them what it is that they need in response. Yeah, of course I'm still here. I'm not going to go anywhere. You mean the world to me. This relationship is extremely important to me. Things like that, instead of, oh my God, you always cling to me. Why can't you ever just let me have my space? I just wanted, like, one day without talking to you. That's actually going to compound the trauma. Do you see the difference in those relationship dynamics that I'm talking about right now?
Right, definitely. What do you think, Jason?
Well, when you talk about regression, is that something like that hypnosis is useful? Or are you just kind of consciously regressing?
See, the thing about regression is a lot of people don't realize this, but regression is something that an individual can do on their own, and I recommend that people do, whilst at the same time, if you have a lot of trauma, or I would even recommend this to anyone, really, if we've undergone trauma, having some kind of facilitation or guidance or even just simple presence, someone just holding space for us while we regress into something from the past is really beneficial. Now, what I will say is any individual, even without any kind of certification, has the capacity to regress back to a point of trauma. If they're willing to understand, like, if they're willing to, A, re-experience the pain, which is really uncomfortable, honestly, in my opinion, that's the hardest part. The sensations
Absolutely.
That occur. Yeah, re-experiencing the pain is the hardest part. But if they're...
Going through the emotions of, you know, hate and acceptance and love and crying and, you know, those kind of things, yes. Absolutely, it's very raw.
Yeah, it's very raw, and it's super vulnerable. It's all of our core wounds. So if anybody's willing to actually re-experience that pain and go through that, which I highly recommend everyone does, I think that ultimately we can then allow that pain to consume us and we can fully feel it in a way that we're consciously engaging in it. And then there comes a point where that pain will just soften ever so slightly, and that's the access point for us to ask, inside, without mentally searching for an answer, when was the very first time that I felt this way? And it'll be interesting to see what comes. Oftentimes, we may not get a specific memory because so much of it is blocked out. But in that case, the emotion might shift ever so slightly. And then we can, you know, at least intend to be re-experiencing that. And just in re-experiencing something, we're reintegrating it. If we, let's say we get the context of a memory, we can then work within the context of the memory with that aspect of ourselves. So we can then basically reparent that child from our adult perspective. And there's so many different books and resources that can actually aid an individual in going into these kinds of processes with much more depth than what I'm able to just offer on a radio interview, you know, because people definitely need to be able to research and know what to do in certain situations. I would not suggest just trying to dive back and regress back into full, you know, blown childhood traumas without actually getting into some other background.
It's interesting how those way back, and like you said, in the genes and everything, you all carry your stuff with you, and you know, it's a matter of acknowledging it and healing those parts. And I'm just saying this, as you heal, you're healing not only yourself and your being, but you're healing past generations of things that have been carried on.
Oh, my God, you want to hear something so crazy? I love this. Oh, my God, this stuff is just, I'm so passionate about it. Okay, so basically, not only are we healing our past generation, now time is a linear construct. It's for the sake of experience, but let's say we're functioning under the guise of time. Let's say I go through an emotional process that actually starts to clear something from my genes and my ancestral line. It's actually going to start to clear things for my brother and my sister, my mother and my father, and my nieces and my nephews, all at the same time of me just simply regressing back into some of my own trauma. That's how epigenetics works, epigenetic healing and stuff like that.
We call that epigenetic. What is it again? I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
It's epigenetics, so it's epigenetics,
okay.
Which
wow.
is basically the discovery of genes being multidimensional.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like quantum mechanics kind of stuff where like time doesn't really exist. I watch those videos on YouTube and it utterly confuses me.
I know, because the brain basically, the only way that the brain is able to function is within a linear construct. But if you do look from a quantum mechanics or quantum physics perspective, time is actually unlimited. And every potential outcome already exists. So every potential past, every potential present, and every potential future all exist simultaneously. And basically what it is that we're doing is we're selecting a slide out of this, let's say, cesspool of time, all of these different potentials, and we're putting it right in front of us for an experience. And the next slide or scene that we choose to experience gets chosen based upon what we're observing. So our consciousness actually becomes the fueling mechanism to determine what our next experience is. So that's why it's really important that we start to heal a lot of these different patternings and belief systems and traumas that are ingrained within our subconscious state of being, because that's ultimately dictating what we're going to experience within the future to a great degree.
I want to pick one where I'm a billionaire. That's going to be my next one I'm going to pick.
I know, I'm working on that too. Well, and do you want some tips on what to do in that? I can totally give you some tips on that.
Oh yeah, lay it on me.
Okay, so ultimately, and this goes for any individual, so all of you guys who want to become billionaires, first and foremost, the belief system that I am not worthy, that I am not deserving, all of the emotions and thoughts that are in line with those belief systems and patternings, which I will be real, there is not a single person on this planet today that does not have that to some degree or another. Those are the places that you need to start going. What ways do I not actually believe that I can actually have something? What ways do I don't actually feel worthy of having something? What is another really great thing? A lot of abundance mentality. If you have people who were either A, weaned from the breast before they were ready, or B, not even breastfed in the first place, are going to actually see that showing up in their financial revenue later on in life. Because when we're children, especially as babies, our abundance is actually coming directly from our nourishment. What are some other things that you can do?
So what can you do to do that if a child has not been breastfed or been weaned too soon? Does that mean that you can't reverse it? Or, you know, that sounds like the root, but what can you do to change that?
Ultimately, what I would do to change that, I mean, of course, I've already mentioned this so many times, you can do a regression back to it. But mm-hmm. The other thing that you can start to do to change that, now we're constantly, if we are predisposed to lack, we are going to be constantly seeing the lack within our lives. I don't have enough of this. I don't have enough of this. I will never have enough of that. And we, by not having enough of these certain things, we actually continue, like, count out, we disregard all of the things that we do actually have. Like the fact that we're able to look outside of our window and see a bunch of amazing trees. The fact that we have air to actually breathe that's clean enough that we're able to breathe it and sustain our lives off of it. The fact that we have bodies that are functioning to some degree that is in alignment with some state of health. Like the fact that we don't actually, it doesn't take effort for our lungs and our heart to bring oxygen in and out of our body is an amazing gift. So one of the things that I would say is consciously start to restructure the way that you think in your daily life and work with some regressive techniques. Those two things in combination are going to work wonders. Now, what you're going to find is you're going to find a multitude of emotions that happen. Like, let's say we go the traditional route of manifesting $1 billion. So we visualize ourselves having it. We feel it in our body. We really understand what it's like to have that reality come to us. And then all of a sudden we have a clenching sensation going on inside of us. We have a sinking in our stomach. We have this sense of despair that's arising. Ultimately, if we start to visualize something that we want and then we start to have a secondary emotional state arise from it, that's our access point. That's our access point to all of the traumas that are in alignment with all of the different thoughts and belief systems that are limiting us from actually achieving what it is that we want. So if we can start to go in, and even if it's just in feeling those emotions, what I really want to stress to people is if you're feeling emotions, you're doing so much integrative work. Now, we're so oriented to instant results that we may not be like, oh, my God, I just sat with the sensation of despair for 15 minutes. What good did that actually do me? In fact, I don't even feel that better. I'm coming out of this, and I'm still feeling like crap. If we don't see immediate results, we're not going to actually consistently do something. And I'll be real with everyone. If we're going to start to awaken to ourselves, if we're going to start to live lives that are more fulfilling, and if we're going to start to actually genuinely heal our traumas, these are lifestyle changes. This isn't a one-time deal. This is literally like, this is me making a practice out of these ways of living and this inner exploration for the rest of my life.
So being able to experience... So if you're experiencing these emotions, then that's kind of the first step in the whole process, isn't it? I mean, it would probably be hard to heal and regress back if somebody was completely dead to everything and had no emotions. So just the fact that the emotions are there indicate that, you know, there's a starting point.
There is a starting point. Now, I love the fact that you brought up that. That's one of the greatest issues, especially within American society. People are severely dissociated. Now, what do I mean by dissociation? Dissociation is basically the process. It's a coping mechanism. It's a survival strategy where we remove our consciousness from our body. So we actually become detached from our emotions. So a lot of people that you see walking around today, they may have the capacity to feel some emotional states, but there are a lot of emotional states that aren't even on their radar. When I first started doing a lot of my own inner trauma resolution work, I had experienced such severe trauma throughout my life that I would get an emotional trigger and I would feel that emotion for maybe, let's say, 2 minutes. I would start to take my awareness into it and it would dissipate into complete numbness for hours. And it actually took a lot of discipline and being like, okay, I know that I'm dissociated right now, to actually start to move through that numbness and just continuously bring my awareness and my presence back into my body, to really start to re-anchor myself into my body. If we're not in our body, we're not going to feel emotions. So honestly, the greater challenge that people are going to come up against in terms of creating a more fulfilling life is learning how to feel again. That is the number one most important thing that anyone can do. Make feeling and your emotions the greatest priority in your life.
What do you think about that, Sherry?
Well, it's pretty deep, I'll tell you that. I agree with Dylan. Absolutely got to go through the process or you're not going to heal. I think we all come in damaged in one degree or another. It's just how much and how much you want to heal. So we're here to learn, and it's a schoolhouse, and it's just a matter of how you want to go and heal those wounds or those parts of yourself that are fractured and are in pieces to pull you back to becoming whole. So that's what I feel.
And then once you work on all these things, I assume that helps make everything that you want in life, makes it easier to manifest. Is that correct?
Once it does make it a lot. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I get so jumpy because I'm so excited. It does make it a lot easier to manifest, but ultimately it makes everything in life more juicy. Our relationships develop. We get more depth with our relationships. We start to experience more connection with ourselves and the world around us. We actually start to live life rather than just blindly moving through life. So, yes, you can manifest a more fulfilling life, 100%. But there becomes a point, too, where we develop such a deep relationship with all emotional states of being. I'll be real with you. There were times where I was in some of the deepest pain of my life, and some of the greatest beauty was able to come in that moment. it becomes a point where our life starts to become a canvas. So yes, we can paint whatever it is that we want, whilst at the same time, what's already on the page, we actually start to recognize the beauty of that and have gratitude for that. I never thought I'd be able to say that I'd be able to have gratitude for such extreme states of pain and despair, but they have literally been the greatest growth points of my life. Some of my deepest pain has gotten me into some of the most amazing states of awareness that is priceless. It's beyond anything that you could manifest in terms of any kind of physical abundance.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing, Dylan. You're doing your work.
Thank you.
That's amazing. Because a lot of people don't want to do their work. They look so, you know, they're in such a state of ego and disconnect that they don't see what's inside themselves and what's really the root cause. How do they react? Why are they in a position or they react, their triggers come out. It's all external. They're just all symptomatic. They're not. It's not getting back from the source.
No, it's not. And one of the greatest issues with society today is, like, we're like, okay, let's treat the symptoms. But what about the root cause? And what most people don't actually realize is before anything is even manifested on a physical level, like I'm going into symptomology, like ailments now, any kind of sickness, cancer, all of these imbalances within the body actually start, and I know you know this, Sherry, with your Chinese medicine and all of your knowledge of energy, but all of our imbalances start from a mental, emotional, and energetic level 100% of the time. It's once we don't actually process and allow those in states of discord to move through us and find some sense of resolve or integration, that's when it starts. If that doesn't happen, that's when things start to manifest in the body. And that's when you have to start to address things from a physical perspective as well, which is a lot harder than going to the root. And then you really have to integrate the root of the cause and physicality. So let's say someone has cancer. Sure, they have to be able to treat the cancer, but they also have to still be able to go into the states of being that created the cancer in the first place.
It's absolutely. It's true. That's very, very true. I started in oncology, and, you know, it's very tough to, you know, help in facilitating some healing, some comfort and some closure in people. And sometimes they're not even in this lifetime, they're not meant to heal because of their lessons. It could be karmic, it could be past lives, it could be, you know, just lessons here. So it's each individual is so different and each case is so different.
Yep, it really is. It really is. But so what's so interesting is that each individual is so different, but you'll start to, the more that you do a lot of integrative work in terms of the subconscious, you'll find that humanity in and of itself has a collective consciousness. And with humanity having a collective consciousness, we actually have a collective subconscious. So the more work that we do as individuals, we're actually clearing the consciousness of humanity at large, and we're changing the patterns within humanity at large. One of the greatest things that people don't realize is, like, our world is in such a state of discord. I really like to utilize, like, if people can imagine the infinity symbol, right? It's the 8 turned on its side. That's what the number 8 turned on its side. Let's say that one side of the infinity symbol is our internal world. Let's say on the other side of that infinity symbol is the external world. It's an interconnected system. So any kind of discord that's going on internally is going to reflect externally, and any kind of discord that's going on externally is going to show up inside. So in order for us to really start healing humanity, we have to start with ourselves.
And boy, does humanity need it.
Yeah, our world's pretty twisted, that's for sure.
Well, we can, you know, heal ourselves, you know, one person at a time, and that starts with ourselves, and, you know, just radiate that light being, you know, upper vibration. You know, you want to be around people, like I said last week when the girls round table, is that you want to try and be around people that are, you know, light vibration, you know, and laughter and joking and, you know, just having support and, you know, things like that. Something very, very positive. You don't want to be around negative people because they can drain you, and they are sick, and it's just hard, and they need to do that. They're the ones that need to be loved the most and need to do the work themselves the most. But, you know, all you can do is with your positive presence, maybe, you know, plant a seed or maybe help facilitate, but not be around for, you know, too long. You don't want yourself to be too exposed to those kind of things. So, yeah, it's all about vibration. Absolutely.
It is. It is completely about vibration.
Hey, Dylan, I want to ask you a question that just kind of popped into my head. Dreams, is there any connection, any work that can be done with dreams? Is it a window into the subconscious, or does that not factor into anything?
Oh, my God, it is. And in fact, it's so interesting. So a lot of different references. I've seen this come up from a multitude of sources, so many that it would be too much to cite each one. But a lot of modern-day psychology has found that our dreams are actually an inner dialogue and scene that's playing out where basically every character, every part of the scene, even a house, is an aspect of our consciousness that's basically working to heal itself. So a lot of dream interpretation will go in the route of symbolism, but one of the best things that an individual can do is actually personify or step into the perspective of whatever that being or character is within your dream. So let's say you're having a dream where you're talking to a homeless man, and then a car flips over and crashes next to you, and then all of a sudden there is, you know, a crazy windstorm. Now, I'm just throwing out a random example. You could actually step into the perspective of the homeless man that you're having an interaction with, and I bring this up because this is not fully random. I've actually had this dream. But you could step into the perspective of him. You could step into the perspective of the car that's crashing next to you. You can, and that's an inanimate object. You can actually personify the inanimate object. What would that car feel like as it's crashing? That car might actually feel like it's completely out of control of its life. Like the driver in the seat doesn't actually know what's good for it, and the car doesn't want to go in that direction, but it has no choice. That's a deep amount of meaning and depth that one can actually extract just from taking the perspective of that car. That the windstorm. There's so many different things. Our dreams are such a gateway to the subconscious mind. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. If people were to basically record their dream states and look at their dreams from each perspective every day, they would have a very vivid picture about what's playing out in their subconscious.
My dreams.
So, Dylan,
typically...
why do you think people, and myself included, why do you think sometimes we don't remember our dreams?
Okay, so when that's the case, I believe that basically our consciousness is fixated within this third dimensional reality, and when we go to sleep, our consciousness basically goes out, and it goes out of even our individual identity, out of human consciousness, and returns back to the source of all creation. And when that happens, and there's a lot of people that would agree with me on this and feel the same way, when that happens, we basically make our trek back down. And sometimes if we go far enough out, that's where I believe that when we're coming back into physical embodiment, we're coming back so fast that we speed through the fourth dimensional construct that you would see dreams play out on. We just enter back into the physical body so fast that we don't have cognitive understanding of what happened within that plane of existence. This is a really esoteric answer for you.
Well, we do... We are sort of getting towards the end. I wanted to give you an opportunity. Now, if somebody wants to learn more about this, or is there a way that people can contact you?
Yeah, okay. So ultimately, There is my website and my email that are really good places to contact me. And I could just throw out one if that makes things easier.
Yeah, you can throw out whatever you want.
Okay, so I made the mistake of making my email so long. So I guess the best way for people to find more about me, my website is initialinterconnect. So like the word connection, but it's just connect. It stops at the C. .wix.com/website. So that's kind of complicated. But my email, which might be easier for people, is initialinterconnection@outlook.com. And that's initialinterconnection@outlook.com.
Very cool.
I really enjoyed listening to your discussion of these different things. It's really fascinating. And I don't know about Jason. I think he would agree, but I would love to have you back in the future and to talk more deeply about this and is how much we can learn from these, and our listeners can take the information and apply it to themselves. And I really like your no-nonsense approach. It's just very informative.
I am so thankful for both of you guys having me on this show. This has been so much fun. And I really mean that. This has been a blast.
I think that we all need to evolve, don't we, Jason? And I learn. I love it. I'm learning even at my age. I feel like I'm a little girl, empty the cup and fill it up with new information and relearn different new things. It's just so exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said before, you know, the world seems out of control, and if you know we can do our little part to improve our consciousness, then we should do it. I know for me personally, I've kind of made a conscious effort to do that, not knowing exactly how to do that, but getting you on the show tonight has offered me some clarity on improving that area within me. So I want to thank you, Dylan, for coming on the show tonight.
Thank you
so Dylan,
much,
quickly,
Jason.
I'm
really
going to ask you did stress a lot about abandonment traumas. What other traumas can be there that you have helped people?
Okay, so interestingly enough, you'll find that everybody pretty much has some kind of pattern for every kind of trauma, but you are going to see predominant patterns for certain individuals. So you'll have abandonment trauma and enmeshment trauma, which are two developmental traumas that I discussed. And those will even start to create personality disorders like narcissism, borderline personality disorder, things like that. You'll have traumas that go in terms of boundary violation. Like, let's say a kid, 2 years old, being like, I want to do this. And dad's like, no, you're not going to do that. I know what's better for you, and that's not what we're doing. That child trying to express their point of choice can even create a trauma based on, I have no boundaries. I have no ability to express my sense of power. Trauma is such a vast spectrum. Like I said, trauma is really any kind of pain that goes without resolve. So there are so many different types of traumas that's a whole nother realm to start getting into.
Right.
Well,
when you were talking about having boundaries, children having boundaries, you know, it's interesting how our society, we go into conspiracy theories and that kind of overlapping, but you know, a lot of the parents and anymore, you can't discipline your child because for fear of, you know, abuse, so-called labels of abuse, is somebody going to turn you in? They don't think that you're, you know, doing the proper methods of discipline, yada, yada, yada. When you're talking about, not abandonment, but the different kinds of traumas, you know, it could really, it could just manifest in so many different ways. It's just amazing. And we're almost caught between a spiritual world and a legal world.
Well, and I'll be real. The picture perfect household is so full of trauma. Our ways of parenting are, quite frankly, very barbaric. Now, I'm not trying to, like, our parents are doing a wonderful job. And all of our parenting styles come from our society. And so parents are doing what they can with what they know. They're doing the best job they possibly can, especially with whatever experiences and traumas they have going on themselves. Now, what it is that I will say, like, for an example, in terms of boundaries, we, like, let's say a child expresses a boundary, no, I don't want to go yet. We can actually create a situation where it's like, well, no, we still have to go. We still have to leave, but we can either A, leave in 1 minute or 3 minutes. Which one? And then the child still actually has that sense of empowerment in being like, I can choose 3 minutes. I'll go with 3 minutes. So it actually, there's ways in which we can work around a child's boundaries and still do what, you know, is right for ourselves and maintain that child's boundaries. So it's just, we have a lot of reworking.
I go at all. I have three, so I remember their time I want to go. They don't want to go.
And I'll be real, like, trying to create a person with no trauma is a really unrealistic goal. Everybody's going to have traumas to some degree or another, and the best that we can do is try our best to alleviate as much as we possibly can. But you know what? There's going to be times where the child isn't going to want to go, and it's like, no, dude, you got to go right now. Then, you know, that is, it's going to happen. And, you know, we're, humans are doing the best that we can. And, you know, I really give a shout out to parents because parents, I mean, it's not easy being a parent, especially with, you know, working and raising a child and all of the expectations from our partners, our society, X, Y, and Z. Like, we have a lot going on as parents and we have a lot of different shoes to fill, and that's not easy. And nobody understands that unless they actually have been a parent. And, you know, there are books and stuff that are being released that are on child development that are really beneficial for every parent to read. But so much of that is, you know, just coming out. It's very interesting in terms of how much child development hasn't really been considered by humans, really, if you look through human history. Children have not really been considered until, let's just say, at best, the last 30 to 50 years. And even in the last 5 years, there have been major points of evolution in terms of the way that we raise our children. So we're all working with what we can, and we're all expanding with the knowledge that we have. And that's the best that anybody can ask of themselves.
There you go. Well, Dylan, I want to thank you. We got to wrap it up. Thanks for coming on. We'll have to get you back on because it sounds like we can go a little bit longer on this subject, and we know being humans, we all need it. So thank you again for coming on.
Thank you so much, Jason. I really appreciate it. And thank you, Carrie. I really appreciate you having me on the show as well.
Very welcome.
Sherry. Oh, my God. Sherry, I did it again. I have a friend named Carrie. I'm so sorry. I did that twice.
It's okay. I've been called all kinds of names.
I'm so sorry.
I'm giving you a bad time. God. See, that's just being able to take things lightly. No problem. You owe me one.
I really appreciate you having me on, and I can't wait to see you again.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you so much, Dylan. That was a great show. Awesome. Hey, we're going to wrap it up next week. We've got for the first time, actually the second time, first time with this paranormal group, second time with this paranormal investigator. He's a personal friend, but he's founded or is the head of Paranormal Night Stalkers. Is that correct? I hope so. Anyway, he is also spearheading it's the North Coast, British Columbia paranormal team, and I will clarify that next week, but these guys are just amazing. I have worked with Joel before and also Michael. They are the spearhead of their team, and we're going to have them come on the show, and we may have a surprise of some EVP recordings. These guys are dynamic. I want to promote them because I feel that their team is number one, is just integrity. They want the facts, ma'am. And they are also humble. And I just really am very proud to be part of their team as a paranormal consultant. And we just kind of mesh. It's just a really good feeling. It's just wonderful. And so I'm going to introduce them next week, and we're going to talk about investigations and possibly get some EBVs from their investigations. That'll be awesome.
It's always fun talking about ghosts.
I know. We haven't had a paranormal team on for a while, so it's going to be great. Good to have it kind of mix it up.
Absolutely. Well, unless you have anything else, Sherry, I guess we'll see everybody next Sunday at p.m. and hope everybody has a safe and fantastic week.
Take care. Thanks for your support, everybody. Peace.
Good night, everyone.